Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boy, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So, I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world, right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. Novak Djokovic will miss the U.S. Open and the remainder of the 2017 season with an elbow injury. It will break his streak of 51 straight majors. He is currently ranked fourth in the world. Italian Federica Pellegrini has upset American Katie Ledecky in the 200-meter freestyle at the World Championships in Budapest, breaking her a string of 12 straight World Championship wins. And the Phoenix Suns point guard Brandon Knight has torn his ACL and will likely miss the entire 2017-2018 season. He averaged 11 points in 21 minutes through 54 games last season. Today we have Matt Reed, Stefan Filial, and the return of Dr. John Petrick. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
So let's get loud and let's get proud. We got a game to play. Game on. Let's play ball. There won't be a better time to give it our all. Stand tall. Let's get it on. I know you hear that crowd. They're about to get loud. It's game on.
The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, always feeling fine in Oakland, California. My good buddy, Matt Reed. Welcome, Matt.
What's up, Clayton?
Hey, Matt, you know, there is a huge breaking news out of Cleveland today.
Uh-oh. What's going on?
Hugh Jackson has gone to the old Twitter machine, and he has tweeted out that Cody Kessler is the number one quarterback entering camp.
Yes, as it should be. Good for Cody.
That's right. He said he deserved to be the number one quarterback, and I don't know if that means he's done something right or that means he's done something wrong, Matt.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, I was actually surprised last year how well he played. I thought he would be, you know, he was being thrown to the wolves, but at least he competes.
Yeah, I guess you can say that about him. Every time I talk about how terrible my Cleveland Browns are, I know it gives our good buddy, Dr. John Petrick from the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, a big old smile, being the Pittsburgh Steeler fan that he is. Welcome, Dr. John.
Hi, how are you guys? Glad to be back.
Yeah, good to talk to you. I know that you're probably hearing the Cody Kessler news already getting nervous about week one when Cleveland and Cody Kessler take on Ben Roethlisberger and your Steelers, huh?
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a good game. I wish for your sake, friend, for the team's sake, that hopefully this year for the Cleveland, they need some sort of win somewhere, right?
Something. You know, you lose the World Series to the Cubs, LeBron and Kyrie and all the turmoil. We're going to have Stefan Filial with us at the bottom of the hour. He's going to break down the mess that is the Cleveland Cavaliers. But, yeah, tough times there in Cleveland. Another place there's some tough times, Dr. John, is in Los Angeles, where Clayton Kershaw has a back injury. He was having a whale of a season, 15-2, ERA of 2.04, WHIP down under 1 at 0.88. He's got back issues, team saying 4 to 6 weeks. What is going on with Clayton Kershaw?
Well, hey, we got some really great news with Clayton. Here's the good news. He does not have a herniated disc. An MRI ruled that out. Okay, so, and typically what happens is that when the disc is herniated, you get a kind of, you have a, like, almost like a jelly donut, and the jelly in the donut kind of squirts out, presses on a nerve, and there's severe pain. That is not what's happening to Clayton. What happened to Clayton is just a good old-fashioned strain sprain to the lumbar spine. I'm questioning the 4 to 6 weeks. I think that they'll rest him because he's having such a great year and they want to keep him. However, typically strain sprains are 2 to 4 weeks, maybe 4 to 6, depending upon the severity. And they are graded. But the great news is that he should have no problems when he does return. He should be fine.
The Dodgers, Matt, are sitting at 70-31, despite having these issues with Clayton Kershaw's back. Hyunjin Ryu has been basically absent for 2 years. How are the Dodgers getting it done?
The offense is doing a great job. The bullpen is fantastic, and the other starting pitching has been pretty good. From guys like Rich Hill. McCarthy was having a good year. I mean, just everyone. They're just playing great baseball. It's a team effort all around. And, you know, if they keep it going that way, obviously with Kershaw being the ace, you need to get him back, especially before the playoffs. But Dr. John, I mean, you know, we had the disc issue with him last year. Now we have a back injury. Is this something that's going to keep acting up on him for you know, not only this season but beyond?
Yeah, unfortunately, these things, you'd love to hope, and believe it or not, I mean, especially in MLB, they got some of the best trainers and the best physicians in the world looking at it, and they're doing everything that they can. In this case, they're trying to stabilize his core, trying to work on the back muscles, the front muscles, some sides, even the pelvic floor and the diaphragm. So they're trying to kind of make him stable. The pitching motions always plays havoc. It's that whipping motion that always plays havoc on the lumbar spine. So once it's injured, it's kind of one of those things where it'll always be in the back of his mind, and it'll always kind of be one of those things that may have a tendency to flare up. Depending upon how well he recovers from this, and depending upon how well they kind of maintain it in the postseason or the offseason, will be an indication of how long this kind of creeps up. But once you have a back injury and you have it, and he did, remember, last year he did have the herniated discs, so he does have a significant problem, but it doesn't show the disc being damaged in this most recent episode. So they're going to have to bring him back. They're going to have some core strengthening and training. They'll probably do some active release techniques and some different things on him to try to get him back. But for the most part, he will probably always have something he's going to have to be concerned with. Kind of that old adage, I can't do that because of my back. He's going to have to change that to the adage, I have to do that because of my back. And there will be some things he's going to have to maintenance. It's not one of those things he can just, you know, pop and pray and think, oh, that's great, it'll be fine. No, he has got to work to get this back.
We've seen what back issues can do as they continue to mount. We saw what happened with Steve Kerr at the Warriors. And we've seen Tiger Woods' entire career to sort of take a big tank once he hurt his back. Are there similarities between what's going on with Clayton Kershaw that could develop into what's happening with Steve Kerr and with Tiger Woods, or are they separate issues?
Well, and I've been saying this on the show for years now, every single injury is ultimately different. There are some similarities to it. I mean, Tiger Woods suffered some degeneration in his lumbar spine. He had some herniated discs, as well as he had some other strains, brain issues that kept coming up and lingering. The good news is that the pitching kind of formation, the way you're throwing, is different than the golf swing. So that's kind of one of those things. Tiger always put himself in a bad position because of the amount of time that he had to ultimately swing in the club. Baseball is a little bit different. Strength training is a little bit different. But at the same time, a back injury is a back injury, and he'll have to work it. It's not the same. Neither one, none of the three injuries are actually can be considered exactly the same. He's just dealing with the strained sprain now, where Tiger kept dealing with the same herniation to the disc and the kind of the perpetual nature that disc problem gives. So, I would probably say it's safe to say you're going to see Clayton back probably within the next 4 to 6 weeks for sure.
And with his sort of treatment, if you had a pitcher or somebody like that and you need to maintain their cardio, you need to maintain their arm strength, but it seems like every exercise you do is tough on your back. How do you sort of navigate trying to keep him in as best shape as possible?
Well, you don't really run from it. You take it. One of the things that you would do is you do some manual therapies on it. You want to find out with the strain sprain. The last thing you want to do is you want to get him stagnant. You want to keep Clayton moving. That was one of the most important things that they're going to want to do, is to keep him moving. And they'll be judicious in that movement. They're not going to have him, you know, pounding, you know, 5 mile runs. They're going to be doing lots of manual therapy and conservative care, chiropractic, some soft tissue work like active release, and then they're going to add a strengthening pattern. pattern. So it's not so much an exercise, Clayton, and more importantly, it's going to be actually about the movement patterns. You remember the screen that we run our athletes through. That functional screen shows us where the movement patterns are broken and what we need to do to fix them. So once they kind of get an idea of where he's strained and how it's strained, they'll add the right protocols. Again, this is a mild grade 2 to 3 strain sprain. They're going to take every precaution because they don't want their main man sideline for the entire season, so they'll be a little bit more cautious than they will have concern.
All right, this is the Joe Fan Show. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas. Matt Reed out in Oakland. Dr. John Petrick, our guest from the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center. Dr. John, I would be remiss if I did not ask you, being the boxing and MMA guy that you are, about Mayweather and McGregor. They're in the news, but sort of for all the wrong reasons. They had the press tour that turned out to be an absolute fiasco, and all of the talk right now is about the incredible amounts of money that are being laid here in Las Vegas on Conor McGregor. What have your initial thoughts been as they sort of ramp up into camp?
Well, originally when this first was happening, like everybody else, I thought, man, this isn't, I don't know how much of a black eye this is going to be on either sport. It wasn't something that we necessarily wanted to see. And then you could tell being around the sports that this really turned in from a boxing match to a fight. And that's one of the interesting things that I have noticed. I've also noticed when Floyd's up on stage during these press conferences, there's a lot of kind of him-hawing with Dana. You know, he's doing hey, Dana, I liked you. We were friends. You know, he's kind of kissing up a little bit. And that tells me that he has doubt. He's doubting himself. There's a little bit of doubt that's been placed. Now, obviously, he's 49-0 for a reason. This man's probably one of the greatest that's ever lived. But Conor doesn't want to box him. Conor wants to fight him. And I think that's a little bit different. Conor's not afraid of him, and Conor's a much bigger man. He's almost, realistically, probably 30 to 40 pounds heavier than him walking around weight. So now that he's going to be down at that ideal weight, they're using lighter gloves. If Conor can cut the ring off, if he can cut the ring off and not allow Floyd to get on his roller skates, Conor has a legitimate puncher's chance. Throws an incredible left hand, which is Floyd is subject to. So the reality is, who shows up? If Conor shows up and says, listen, you're not getting away from me, I'm going to cut the ring off, I'm going to plant this left hand, and he's got to rough him up a little bit. One of the keys to it is Floyd doesn't want to be roughed up. He doesn't like it and doesn't like people in his kitchen. And normally he's the biggest talker until he met Conor. And Conor's coming for him, and Conor's going to be ready.
Matt, this fight has yet to capture my imagination. I doubt it will. I certainly will not be paying $10,000 to sit ringside. I'm not going to pay $100 to watch it on TV. I'm not going to pay $40 to go and watch it in a movie theater. Have you come around at all, or is this still the dumbest thing that you've heard of in a long time?
It's been entertaining watching these guys go at it through the press tour, but as far as the fight goes, I still don't see any way that Conor handles Mayweather's quickness. And yeah, I'm not excited. I'm in your camp. I won't be going to the fight or even getting a pay-per-view. If somebody gets it and I go to their house, fine, but it's no big deal one way or the other.
Well, you're both invited to my house, that's for sure.
I will absolutely come to Dr. John's.
The one interesting thing I'd like just to bring up quickly here is that this is not like we're having Michael Phelps and Usain Bolt in a competition, maybe in a running or a swimming. You're talking about a person who is a pro fighter. He has and does have a chance. I mean, he's breathing, so he has a chance. He does have a decent stand-up. That's what he's recognized for in the UFC. Certainly not to the caliber and to the quality that you would say from a ringmanship that Floyd has had over the years. Not taking anything away from Floyd, the most interesting thing about this fight is it really is a battle of will. The person who comes to fight the most, the person who comes with the plan, and Floyd's fighting top-level boxers, and he's handling them fine. From the camp and from the people that I know inside the sport, he has progressed tremendously in his boxing, again, his ringmanship, I guess you'd call it. But we'll just have to see on the 26th.
I wanted to ask this of both of you. We'll start with you, Matt. There's been a lot of people that are hesitant to believe in the reality and the legitimacy of this fight. And there's been a lot of grumbling that, you know, we could see Connor because they both are just really greedy and they're going to sucker people out of a lot of money. And the best way for everybody to make more money is a rematch. And sort of the whether or not this fight's on the up and up has been a legitimate conversation for a lot of people. The fact that there is so much money being laid on Conor McGregor now and the books are going to take a bath if he wins, has that helped legitimize this to you? Or are you still weary that there could be some shenanigans in the fix on one side or the other?
With boxing, you always have to think twice, but I think the egos are too big on both sides where one of them is going to lay down for the other. Now, if you know, we don't see a lot of punches thrown early, and we see this go as kind of a deeper fight where both guys are kind of just, you know, pussyfooting around and trying to set up a rematch, then it looks a little fishy. But I think the egos are too big for either one to just to lay down.
Well, Clayton, they could actually be living out the actual Rocky Balboa-Apollo Creed. When Rocky fought Apollo the first time, Apollo was 49-0. So there's a similarity for you. And then they ended up having that split decision draw, so went to 49-0-1. Then he lost to Rocky in the final, so he never actually ended up 49-1-1. And then we all know what happened with the Russian. But, hey, who knows? I doubt you're really going to see anything. People have that rumbling. But I agree with Matt. I think there's a lot of ego involved in this, and there is a lot of money involved in this, and I think that there'd be a lot of people upset. Both of them would lose their license if anything came out, and they'd probably end up losing at least a good portion of their purse. So I think it's going to be a legitimate fight. The press conferences make it a little bit WWE, I get it. But that's selling the fight. Both of these men were really, really good at selling themselves and putting themselves in situations for them to make this type of money. And I believe that if Floyd loses, I don't know what their rematch clause in there, but there could be a definite rematch. I don't know if there is a rematch clause in there. It's not necessarily for a title or for a belt, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that they'd actually have anything in there for a rematch.
All I know is the shark didn't lay down for Michael Phelps, so maybe we won't see that on this either. Dr. John, great to
what a joke that was. God bless him, but man, that was terrible.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Dr. John. We will check back in with you before this fight happens again, and I want to get your thoughts on Triple G and his fight with Canelo Alvarez before that happens. When we come back, Matt and I are going to break down some things happening in baseball and the NFL. This is the Joe Fan Show. NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. The Joe Fan Show scoreboard is brought to you by Kazoom Adventures. For outdoor hikes that can win you money, visit radio.gokazoom.com for exclusive picture and video clues. Get outdoors, find flags, play Kazoom, the hottest new game in Vegas. radio.gokazoom.com. Major League Baseball games from earlier today. Two finals. First up, Tampa Bay over Baltimore, 5-1. That one down at the Trop. Evan Longoria with his 15th homer of the season. And from the big ballpark in the Bronx, the Yankees 9-5 winners over the Reds. Todd Frazier and D.D. Gregorius both with home runs. Three games in progress. Arizona is a 5-2. They are leading the Braves in the bottom of the fourth inning. That one in Arizona. From Seattle, Boston is up 4-0 on the Mariners. That one in the bottom of the sixth. And from AT&T in San Francisco, Pittsburgh and the Giants all tied up at 1 in the top of the fifth. Games later on tonight, starting at 4 o'clock, the Astros are in Philadelphia to face the Phillies. Mike Fiers versus Aaron Nola. Also up at 4, Brewers at Nationals, Jimmy Nelson and Gio Gonzalez. A's at the Blue Jays, Paul Blackburn and Marco Estrada. Royals and Tigers, Ian Kennedy versus Anibal Sanchez. And the Angels and the Indians from Cleveland, Ricky Nolasco versus Carlos Carrasco. Up at 5, the Marlins and the Rangers, Jose Urena and Yu Darvish. Cubs are on the south side at the White Sox, Jake Arrieta and big game James Shields. And the Rockies and the Cardinals from St. Louis, Jeff Hoffman and Carlos Martinez. We got two games from the West Coast starting at 7. Twins are at the Dodgers, Irvin Santana and Brock Stewart. And the Mets are down at Petco to face the Padres, Steven Matz versus Eulalius Chacin. And one big game in soccer tonight, the CONCACAF Gold Cup concludes with the final game from Santa Clara, California. California, 6:30, Jamaica taking on Team USA, and that is a look at your Joe Fan scoreboard. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. Say goodbye to Mexico, Matt. They drop one to Jamaica. Team USA going to play Jamaica in the final.
Yeah, I think everyone was kind of looking forward to the USA-Mexico game, but they'll have to settle for USA-Jamaica tonight.
Yeah, the Reggae Boys knocked out Team USA last time, ended up playing Mexico in the final, and this time swap it around, Mexico bowing out in the semis. Hey, Matt, there's a fair number of things going on in the world of sports today. Most of it has to do with some trade rumors. Yu Darvish, who is scheduled to go to the Hill tonight, lots of talk that he is going to be on the move, as is Justin Verlander and Sonny Gray. When you look at those three fellas, are any or all of them going to move?
I'd say two out of three will see move. Darvish is the kind of the key. I know they said he is available, but I think Texas wants to keep him. They want to extend him, keep him in Texas. And they'd really have to be blown away to move him. I know the Dodgers are looking at him. The Dodgers have the pieces. It's just they're willing to part with all of those. Verlander is he's still a power arm. I think he still has a little life left in him. If he can get away from Detroit, maybe a fresh start somewhere else, and a pennant race to kind of revive him, he would be decent in the second half of the season. Sonny Gray is a big piece. He's under control for two more years. He's pitched really well the last 2 months. Some minor arm injuries, this year and last year, nothing major, like Tommy John surgery or something. So I think he's going to be the biggest piece out there. I know your boys, the Yankees, are looking hard at him. Do they have enough to get it done?
Yeah, they've already toyed around with some of the prospects that they have in the minors in order to get that deal done with the White Sox. Sonny Gray certainly looks to be a piece. What is intriguing about Sonny Gray, as opposed to the other guys, at least in terms of the Yankees, is that they're looking at a twofer of taking him and all-star first baseman Yonder Alonso, because we have seen, Matt, that the Yankees are suffering in terms of what kind of offense they can get from the first base position, but to bring in Sonny Gray and Yonder Alonso is probably going to take a couple of top guys in their minor league system.
Yeah, but I think it's worth it, especially if you think you have a chance to not only win the division, but maybe make a run at the World Series this year. You got to go do it.
Yeah, and if I think if Yu Darvish is going to go, then I don't see any reason why Cole Hamels doesn't go as well. It wouldn't make any sense to me to be the Rangers and get rid of Darvish and keep Hamels.
Yeah, his name's been pretty quiet. There probably will be interest. It'll depend on how much money Texas is willing to eat, because he's due a lot of money. But I read a great article the other day about how many of these prospects actually end up panning out. It's very few, and teams are so afraid to get rid of top prospects. Well, if it means going out and winning a World Series like the Cubs did last year, going and getting Chapman, mm-hmm. I mean, it's worth doing it. So, yeah, a lot of people are afraid to pull the trigger, but in the long run, if you think you have a shot, especially the Dodgers too this year, if we're one piece away, which would be a starting pitcher like a Yu Darvish or a Sonny Gray, go do it. I mean, it's about time.
You know who else thinks they've got a shot, Matt?
Who's that?
That would be a New York Giants defensive end, Jason Pierre-Paul, who said that the Giants could go undefeated in the NFL this year.
It's the most absurd thing I've heard. Really, the Patriots had the best chance to go undefeated. Took it all the way to the Super Bowl. If anyone has a chance, I think, this year, it's the Patriots again. It's definitely not the Giants.
But man, he gave a plan. He didn't just say that they could win. He gave a specific reason in how they're going to do it. Did you know that?
No, I did not. I did not hear the whole blueprint. What is it?
He said, as long as all 53 guys work together, no one can defeat you if you all work together.
Wow, now those are words to live by right there. It just takes all 53 guys,
right,
including Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Marshall. You put those two. Let's see those two guys get it together first before we worry about the other 51.
Yeah, and then the bad part is that then you have to assume that the other 53 guys that you're playing are not all working together. Because if they work together and you work together and with the shortened overtime rules, that equals a tie, I think, Matt.
We're going to see a lot of ties in this year.
Yeah, they're real quick, pretty big weekend for a couple of folks. Jordan Spieth, what he did on the back nine of the British Open. Chris Froome wins his fourth Tour de France, his third in a row. And up until today, Katie Ledecky, dominating in the World Swimming Championships, gets beat today. Who impressed you over the weekend?
I would say Spieth. So, you know, once he hit the ball about 100 yards to the right.
Into the driving range?
Yeah, driving range, trucks parked over there. I mean, you felt the wheels, because he had already started off slow, and you just felt the wheels falling off. Kuchar was playing well. It was like, and Kuchar's never got his major. This is going to be his time. Spieth saves with a bogey there, but then comes back and goes, boom, birdie, eagle. It's like, that was pretty impressive. I think he showed a lot right there, because it looked like he was going to fold. Everything was set up for him to fold and for him to bounce back that way. Huge showing, and that's why he's a major champion.
I felt so bad for Kuchar, because when you're on the second half of the back nine and you've got a one-shot lead and you go par, birdie, par and end up with a two-shot deficit, like that, how terrible is that?
It's brutal.
It's brutal.
Absolutely,
like,
brutal.
Par, birdie.
Yeah.
Par. That with a lead, par, birdie, par equals you still have your lead.
Or a two-stroke lead or whatever. Yeah, the fact that you lose your lead, especially after watching everything that was going on with Spieth, he had to feel like he was in the driver's seat.
Yeah, it just seemed, it was that tee shot on 14 that almost aced. That was the turnaround point. But, yeah, exciting weekend all around. I said congratulations to Chris Froome on the fourth Tour de France, a third in a row. When we come back, Stefan Filial is back in the house. He's going to join us and talk about all of the nonsense happening in the NBA. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lveprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, Matt Reed out in Oakland, California, and Matt.
Yep.
It is hard for me to believe that this is happening, because he's been gone so long. But Stefan Filial has finished up his duties at the Kids' Choice Sports Awards in Los Angeles and has returned to civilization to talk a little basketball with us, and I could not be happier. Welcome, Stefan.
Oh, Clayton, I'm so good. I'm so happy to be back, man.
Yeah?
Yeah. Too much hiatus.
Too much time, I guess, Matt. He was on the slime slide with Sierra.
No, man. Russell Wilson's my hype, but I'm good. I don't want to throw those
You know, how he rolls. It's Sierra. It's Ariana Grande, Avril Lavigne. Like, every time you turn around, Stefan is upgrading from us. So we're glad, though, that you could come back and talk a little basketball. And we thought to ourselves, didn't we, Matt, what in the world are we going to talk about? NBA free agency should be pretty much over. Everyone should just be on their banana boats and cruising around Ibiza and minding their own business and behaving. And then, boom, Kyrie Irving happens.
Yeah, man. Kyrie, he wants to get his own team again. I feel like he thinks that he's grown from playing with LeBron James, and he wants another shot at it, because prior to that, he dealt with a lot of injuries, and let's just face it, LeBron was just on the Miami Heat. So they didn't really pan out when he was by himself, but I think he's had his LeBron James Miami moment playing with LeBron James in Cleveland,
right?
And he feels like he's grown, and he wants to go on his own.
Yeah, this whole situation is turning out to be a bit of a mess, Matt, and I can't really fault Kyrie so much of it, because it's not like Kyrie really sort of made it public. It sort of came out of other people that made it public.
Rumored that it came out of LeBron's camp. And I feel like that's been what's a lot of the tension has been going on between Kyrie and LeBron's camp, is that Kyrie's camp has said that yeah, we're not going to disclose this at all, because they've had discussions with the Cavs front office prior to this. Like, he was having discussions about being traded prior to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they wanted to keep it quiet and got out somehow.
Yeah, like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives, Matt. And what is going on? Who's going to prevail in Cleveland? Is this going to be one of those things where they all end up looking at each other on opening night and they're all standing around the circle together?
Unfortunately, you know, for Cleveland fans, yeah, it's the end is near, because Kyrie's going to get out of town. I think, especially with them bringing in Derrick Rose, I think the writing's on the wall for Kyrie to be moved somehow, some way. But I think the bigger picture is, and Kyrie knew this, and he didn't want to be stuck in Cleveland with whatever was going to be left, is that LeBron's going to be moving on too. So Cleveland, this year they will still compete even without Kyrie, but the writing is on the wall that this is the end of the Cavs' run.
Well, if you paid attention to Dan Gilbert and Kobe Altman after their press conference, it seems like they don't have any plans of just giving Kyrie away.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that, hey, look, he's with us for 2 to 3 more years. I mean, you're either going to give me something good or you're not getting him at all. Because Dan Gilbert even went on to say that Pacers could have got a lot better than what they got with Paul George.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's just indicating that they're going to hold on to him as long as they can. And if it goes into this season, then it does. I mean, you expect him to be at camp. So
the latest rumors, Matt, are that Minnesota is getting involved, and there could be a deal sending Andrew Wiggins the other way back to Cleveland. Now, if you do that deal, are you undoing all the things that you've done to get better this summer?
It's a good question. I think Wiggins obviously still has some progression left in him. Jimmy Butler is a guy that kind of plays the same position, but I think they can coexist. I think the bigger deal would be Jeff Teague and somebody else. You know, they just bring in Teague, but they can't move him until December.
Right.
So, yeah, as well as he fits in Minnesota, I think. I just don't think that they're going to wait that long to move him. And I don't think Kyrie's going to let him wait that long. You know, they might, you know, he is under contract. He's got to show up and do this and that. But it's just going to be a bad situation. It's just going to get bad really quick if he's still around. I think with the news out right now, you have to get rid of him.
Yeah, I don't think Kyrie wants to be there at all. Even apparently from another news source out of Denver, they're saying that, you know, he would definitely be down to play with the Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they have quite a few pieces as well that could be into trade talks with Cleveland. But as far as the Timberwolves, Andrew Wiggins, I feel like they'd be better because they got rid of Andrew Wiggins to get all the pieces they have now. But then you bring Andrew Wiggins back and still have those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just it's kind of loading up on what they need, which is another small forward and that can come off the bench and do something for them. Or, I mean, have them at the two guard, because yeah. I feel like...
I mean, it absolutely makes sense for Cleveland.
Yeah,
what I'm talking about is does it make sense for Minnesota? I mean, Minnesota's like trying to acquire all these pieces, and now they could be getting rid of one of the major ones.
Yeah, but, I mean, they'd be bringing a major one in where they've been lacking for the past few years. And I mean, and Zach LaVine, they're a good player. He's a good player. And they had Chris Dunn, who didn't pan out so well because Rubio, like, pretty much outplayed him mm-hmm. in his contract year. And then he goes to the Jazz. So they still have that position that's open for them that they would need, because they have a wing, they have a guy mm-hmm. on the block, and then they would have a point guard.
Another team, Matt, that's been involved in basically every rumor for every free agent all winter long and has gotten nobody is the Phoenix Suns. And Eric Bledsoe and Josh Jackson, who they just drafted, would be headed the other way to Cleveland, and it's the same situation. Are you blowing up what you tried to build before it's built?
Yeah. From what I hear, they already told Jackson that he will not be moved. I think he's a major piece that they really like. The fact that he fell to them, I think, was big, that he's going to stay there. Bledsoe seems like a guy they've been willing to move, and they've been trying to move.
I don't know what else they could pair up with Bledsoe to get a deal for Kyrie, but I mean, we are talking Kyrie Irving, who can score the basketball, no doubt. He doesn't give you much on the defensive side. I don't know leadership-wise how he would be with his own team. It remains to be seen, but he can score, and I think he's got that will and that ability where he wants to be the guy, he wants to be the closer. So if you don't have to blow up your team, if it's just Bledsoe and maybe some draft picks or whatever, then it's worth doing it. Bledsoe and Jackson, it starts to add up to be too much, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think Eric Bledsoe on the Cavs, I think at that point, Derrick Rose would start. Mm-hmm. As opposed to if Kyrie was still there, he would come off the bench. Eric Bledsoe, he can definitely contribute if he stays healthy. I mean, you can't have, like, your starting point guard and your backup point guard keep going down in the middle of the season if you're trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, Derrick Rose, for all of the bad things that happened to him last year, he did average the most points that he's averaged in a per game since he came – since he had the knee surgery.
Yeah.
But he's still not – I don't know that you can rely on him for anything.
Yeah, it's like he went up productively, but then mentally he, like, completely checked out.
Right.
Like, most of the time. He was just playing for himself. I mean, honestly, on that team last year, you didn't really have too many options. And he does – he's like a mini LeBron to me. And it was this is actually kind of close to what Eric Bledsoe was compared to the beginning of his career, was being a mini LeBron, short, stocky point guard, drives hard, mm-hmm. Is very athletic, but can't really shoot the three.
Right.
Eric Bledsoe was actually a better three-point shooter than Derrick Rose. But, I mean, like, you look at replacing Kyrie Irving with Derrick Rose, that doesn't make you any better because they both can get to the rim, but Kyrie Irving has that three-point shot that
right.
everybody knows is deadly because it won them a championship. And so, yeah, I think they're pretty much stuck in a bind. And, the Suns, I don't know. I mean, leading from that to Melo, mm-hmm. I feel like there are certain teams that just need to stay pat. Melo, he only wants to go to the Rockets. I feel like the Rockets would have to give up way too much to get him. And I think he might just be in up on the Knicks,
mm-hmm.
as crazy as that sounds.
I have thought for the longest time that the LeBron leaving Cleveland was sort of more of a media play up than an actual reality. Up until recently, mm-hmm. maybe the last 2 weeks or so, Matt, do you see this whole situation and the way that it's handled and everything that's gone wrong in the front office and the fluidity of roster spots, do you see that as maybe being a situation where LeBron could look the fans in the eyes and be like, man, this place is crazy, I got to go, and it not be another jersey burning?
Oh, I mean – the fact that he won them a championship, I think, bought him whatever he needed to get out of town. This just adds to it and gives him another excuse. I mean, he's been laying roots in L.A. for the last few years now, and you know, he's got a home there. He's starting a bunch of businesses there. You know, wants to be a Hollywood guy, and so I think the writing has been on the wall. How serious we had to take it was kind of up in the air, but. Like you said, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks, it's just looking more and more like there is an excuse for him to leave now. He's going to leave. You know, there's a lot of money out here on the West Coast that's going to be freed up by the Lakers or even the Clippers, even though I don't think it goes to the Clippers. I think it would only be the Lakers. But, like I said, Cleveland had their run. And like you know more than anyone, Clayton, I mean, this is just Cleveland for you, right?
Right, exactly.
Can't have too many nice things for very long.
No, not at all. But LeBron as a Laker intrigues me because it irritates Stefan so much.
No. I mean, Clippers are building their new little arena too. He can go to the Clippers. I'm sure Clipperdale will be happy about that.
Yeah. See, I'm well on record of saying I don't understand why anyone would ever go to Los Angeles, especially when you're at LeBron's stature, and if somebody wants to take a meeting with you, they can come to you.
Yeah,
like, there's no need to be in that market paying all of that. But We'll see what happens when it comes down the pike. One guy, though, that we do know is staying home, and that is John Wall, Stefan. He signed a 4-year extension, which means he's going to be a Wizard for another 6 years.
This move, it's like I understand this move, and I don't. I understand it from I feel like he should have got more money. Mm-hmm. I mean, with all the money that's being out there and with the cap as it continues to increase, I mean, you kind of settle on that. He's comfortable right now. And with that, you start to think, is there something else down the line that he sees that could keep him there? Because re-signing Otto Porter to that big contract, I mean, you got Bradley Beal. John Wall has learned to be a better leader. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, unless they get like a Boogie Cousins or a dominant post player within right. the next couple years.
So you're saying Jody Meeks does not move the needle for you?
Not at all. I mean, I like him. I really do. I wish he would stay healthy because he has a lot of potential still. Mm-hmm. And he's a great shooter. But, I mean, they still need a low post presence. Marcin Gortat isn't doing it for me anymore. And I believe it's yeah, it's just not enough. And right. and Boogie Cousins, I feel like he's going to go to a big market next year. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Washington is the spot, depending on how they do this year, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like they'll probably be top three in the East.
Did this surprise you, Matt? Because there's sort of been John Wall on the move rumors for so long. And it seemed like kind of a really dysfunctional place with him and Bradley Beal and Otto Porter and Ramon Sessions when he was there last season or prior. It just seemed like a bit of a mess. And then all of a sudden, they all love each other. It was like they went on a little run at the end of last season that made everything okay.
I think, A, they figured out how to play or coexist, to play well together. Scott Brooks, I think, had something to do with that. I think when they brought Scott Brooks in, it took a little while to kind of get in the flow. But once they did get in the flow last year, we saw how they ended up the year. And if they build on any of that momentum, then, they're going to be just as good, if not maybe better. And, yeah, at the trade deadline, maybe they go out and get a big piece that helps them, go to the next level. So I think John Wall sees that this team has talent. It has potential. He obviously must like it there, and now he's the draw. He says, hey, I'm here. I'm the guy. Maybe he can go out and recruit some free agents that way.
Yeah, but the thing for me is, they've had potential for a while now, and I think they got better prior to last year because it took John Wall some time and Bradley Beal some hashing out to get things in order. But I think that's why they were so good last year, mm-hmm. to be honest. But my question is where are they really going? Like, where can they really go? I mean, they've got potential, but they've got a lot of money thrown at that potential, and mm-hmm. it might hinder them from getting anything to take them over the next step.
Would you rather be Washington or Miami?
Miami. I feel like if Kyrie went to Miami, to be honest, that automatically puts them top three.
They've been sort of rumored in every free agent, and we haven't seen Miami do anything yet.
Yeah, they wanted Gordon Hayward,
right?
And that didn't work out. Gordon Hayward, I feel like he expected a little more and expected to be wowed by Miami, but they were kind of this is Miami, this is what we have, and I'm Pat Riley, and
we put your face on a poster. Come on,
you're all over our streets.
What else is there, Matt?
Yeah, but other than Whiteside, they have Dragic. They have a couple of young guys that are good, but I don't think Miami's put together any better than Washington is, and I don't see Miami being able to sustain anything. Like you said, they've been in play for a lot of guys, and no one has gone there.
Well,
I think the whole lure of Miami is starting to wear off.
They'll have more cap space in the future because Washington is signing all these guys long term, and as far as Miami, one, they'll have guys like more space in the future, mm-hmm. and two, I mean they've Deion Waiters kind of had a breakout season last year, mm-hmm. and you still got Winslow over there. I think an addition of Kyrie Irving, I feel like if Gordon Hayward couldn't have gone wrong in Miami, I just feel like it wasn't Boston was more appealing to him. I mean, you got Brad Stevens there, and they, you know, what they did last year, and who they picked up in Jason Tatum. I feel like that's some more reassurance and things that are going on there. So I think Kyrie Irving would flourish there. It would be kind of weird because that's where LeBron came from.
Right.
And then Dwayne Wade is still expecting a buyout. He might be going back to Miami. And
Dion Waiters might go back if Kyrie was there, yeah?
Go back to Cleveland?
No, to Miami.
No, Dion isn't. He's in Miami. He balled out last year.
But he still got to rework his contract.
Well, yeah, he's there. He's their guy.
Right.
Though.
But he's still got to rework the deal.
Yeah, he'll go back.
But
he loves Miami.
Yeah. But who knows with Miami? But I kind of like Miami and sort of hope that they do something. And I feel like at least if Kyrie goes to Miami, it's more interesting than if he just goes to the West.
Yeah, I really don't want anybody else in the West, please. The East needs somebody instead of having them be Division II, you know, going against our G League.
Yeah, it's gotta be something. It's more interesting than, like I said, having him try and have a team like the Nuggets fight for that eight slot.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little more interesting, and at least you have him playing LeBron and Gordon Hayward multiple times.
Ooh, Christmas game
In the year, yeah, and you'll have that as well as the playoffs. When we come back, it is going to be a Q&A time. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. It's time for a Q&A. Remember, if you would like to send us a question, just email us to submissions@joefanshow.com or tweet us at Joe Fan Show. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, along with Stefan Filial, Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. Question number one comes to us from Jordy in Boulder City, who asks, will RG3 be on a roster opening day? Hashtag Brittle McBrittlePants.
San Diego is going to give him a look. If he'll be on the roster opening day, it remains to be seen. I don't think he will. I don't know what he really has left in him. The fact that he's getting opportunities and Kaepernick isn't is really crazy in my mind. I mean, Kaepernick, you know, at least has some years left in him and has proven to be, you know, a lot more durable than RG3. So, you know, he's getting a crack at it, but I don't see him being in the league come opening day.
Well, if he goes to San Diego, I say he's not going to be in on the NFL team because they moved to L.A.
Sorry. Chargers.
That's right.
I'm going to start saying the Chargers.
Yeah, there you go. But, yeah, man, I think he does. And I think any quarterback in any discussion at this point of the year for NFL has to include Colin Kaepernick because how can it not? I don't know. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, it's. I think Kaepernick still, I said, is going to get a shot when somebody gets hurt. But I think RG3 might get a shot before somebody gets hurt. If you're going to bring somebody in as a third option or a second option. But I think Kaepernick will probably be the first phone call when a major piece goes down. You would hope so as well. Like I said, I don't think that any one of them are Hall of Fame worthy quarterbacks, but Colin Kaepernick is serviceable. I mean,
according to the Seahawks, he is a starting quarterback.
Yeah, that's right. But he's serviceable.
Have you gotten used to saying Los Angeles Chargers yet? I still don't know.
No, never.
I haven't gotten used to it either. Corey in Las Vegas asks, who has the best chance to catch the Indians in the Central, the Royals or the Twins? Hashtag shakeups.
I'm gonna say the Royals. I like the Twins team, but I think they're still young and they're a couple pieces away. Even though they went out and got Jaime Garcia, I think the Royals have started to play good baseball again. You know, they have the talent. They have the guys that have gotten it done before. Lorenzo Cain, Hosmer. They get if Alex Gordon can heat up a little bit, I think this team is still good. And I think they have a chance if anybody to run them down at the end.
Yeah, I say the Royals as well. I mean, they're only a game and a half back, and I know their season is going to end pretty tough for them, seeing the Red Sox and everything. Mm-hmm. But the Twins, Yeah, they're a little far behind, even though they do, you know, they also play the Dodgers mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, the Twins are having they're having a rough go of it against the Dodgers. They've also had a rough go against some pretty good teams, and that the fact that they have a winning record with a negative run differential mm-hmm. screams of a little bit of luck here and there. But I think the Royals, position for position, better a team. Certainly their starting staff is stellar compared to the Twins. Carrie in Las Vegas asks, who made the better long-term lockup, the Penguins with Brian Dumoulin or the Predators with Victor Arvidsson? Hashtag young guns.
I would say the Predators with Arvidsson. I think they got a great deal with him. You know, we've seen the year he had last year, and there's plenty more to come. And I think it was actually, you know, not as a great deal for him, but it was for the Predators. So yeah, I think the Predators got a good deal there.
This is a tough one for me because I feel like Brian Dumoulin is more. It's defense versus offense. Mm-hmm. You got a guy that can win Stanley Cups with you for defense, and you got a guy that can light it up. And,
right.
I mean, I think you need a guy that can light it up, right? Especially at that price.
Yeah, Victor Arvidsson, a little bit for me. I think he's a pretty good and a flashy player. But what I'm concerned with, Matt, is if Mike Fisher doesn't come back to the Predators, and that means Carrie Underwood is no longer the first lady of the Predators, are they going to force Miranda Lambert to date Victor Arvidsson so that they have a star?
That'd be pretty funny, but yeah, hopefully Fisher's got to come back.
Yeah, I think
they need Underwood.
I think he's going to come back for one more go round. So good times, great to have you back, Stefan,
good to be back,
and
man.
Good to have you again, Matt. We will catch up with each other as the summer progresses. You've been listening to the Joe Fan Show. For Matt Reed, Dr. John Petrick, and Stefan Filial, it's been Clayton Hamilton. Enjoy the games. TC Martin, the doctor, is next.